Wednesday, June 14th at 1:33 p.m. at the Festival Hall in Cedar City. And if I could just know who is in person or who's online, actually, would be good to know first. Is there anyone? No one's online today. And then in person, if everyone could just, starting with Paul, go through and say your name. So we'll do this you first and then the last two.
Paul Cousins, Sun County Commissioner.
Wade Hogshead, Beaver County Commissioner.
Jerry Taylor, Garfield County Commissioner.
Melanie Ferguson, Escalante City Mayor.
Tyler Fells, Beaver County School Board.
Donna Watt, Southern Utah University.
Celeste Myers, Kane County Commission.
Brian Theriot with Fife County.
Allison McCoy with Fife County.
Lauren Lewis, Iron County School Board.
Nolan Davis, Milford City Mayor.
Lyle Golding, Porterville Mayor.
Henry Walton, Utah Tech University.
And Gary Zbriski with Fife County.
Woody Christensen with Fife County.
Michael Day, Fife County.
Cole LaCroix with Senator Mike Lee's office. I'm Kyle Wilson with Senator Mitt Romney's.
And Kim Cooper with Fife County.
Great, wonderful. Thank you so much. And if you would please, I would love someone to lead the Pledge of Allegiance. Allison, would you do that? I pledge allegiance to the United States of America and to the Republic of America, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Next, we have review and approved draft minutes from April 12, 2023. And were there any discussion on that or changes? Then I will entertain a motion.
I'll make that motion.
Second?
Second. Go ahead.
I'll give the second to Nolan. All right. Yep. Call for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Now we have the ratification of Social Services Block Grant, SSBG, the scoring and allocation for fiscal year 2024. Is that right? 2024? Yeah.
Michael, can you move your chair so I can?
Yeah.
Actually, in the middle right here. That's the only microphone. I forgot to bring our microphone. So that is our microphone.
You are having a hard day.
I can tell you.
And if you can stand on top of it.
Don't tempt me. Social Service Block Grant. This is one that we get every year. This is one that we sub-grant out 90% of it. We were given the same amount that we were last year. I put it out about a month and a half ago to have agencies write for it. The list that you have in front of you.
It's on page 12 of your packet that has the agenda on the front.
Those are the exact same people that write for it every single year. They're also very good about spending it out every year. This year that's been really good. So I can kept the allocations the same as I did the prior year, especially since we didn't have any additional funding to give any additional to anybody else that would have asked for more. So I just need a ratification of that. And once I do that, I can send the contracts out and get it started.
Can you explain the difference for the Learning Center for Families going from 8 to 12?
They just need addition. They've been wanting more funding. They can use the additional funding to pay for the salary for the program that they are running. We just we unfortunately don't have the money to give to them. During COVID, we did, there was one year we didn't spend it all out one year, and we were able to carry that amount forward. And so that following year, I was able to give out additional funding to the agencies that could use it. And I think that they were hoping that if we did receive more funding, they would be given additional funding. But unfortunately, we were only given the same amount. So I kept it all the same, keep up the rate level.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, of course. Any other questions?
Okay, thank you, Michael. And then seeing them, this is something that requires a motion and a vote. So I'll call for a motion.
Motion to approve.
And who would like to second?
Second.
Great. So now I'll call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously to ratify the Social Services Block Grant scoring and allocation for fiscal year 2024. Item number five is area-wide clearinghouse review, Sitla Land Sale in Kane County. Gary, you want to head us up on that?
I will do that. I will do the same. I will go and stand on the table. Anyway, we just received a notification from Sitlet of a proposed land sale that would take place in November down in Kane County. It's on pages 13 through 16 in your packet there. This is for approximately, let's see, it was 562 acres in Kane County up in the East Zion area that will be sold. I don't know anything about it. This is going to be sold to the high bidder. And I contacted the county on whether they were concerned with that and that, and the county responded back that they were neutral and they had no opposition. So the recommendation would be, as an area-wide clearinghouse, that this committee support the county with a similar motion on there, is that to remain neutral on it. It's one that it's okay, not supportive of it, not supportive of it.
Yeah, I mean, if there were shades, I think we'd be leaning towards supportive, but remaining neutral. So
does somebody ask to purchase this property, or do we know?
So it doesn't close that. They just said that it's a sell.
Yeah.
So it was very tight-lipped.
They just sent me a letter. That's the letter.
And if you're curious, Commissioner Taylor, it's a private landowner who owns quite a bit of the land east of Zion and is working on a East Zion entrance project. And all of the surrounding land is owned by this particular individual, and something to do with the spotted owl. They had some other land they wanted to buy and they couldn't, so they're buying this instead. Fairly innocuous.
Well, but it's out for public. It's going to be a public bid. Anybody's going to have the shot at it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes. So if you're interested.
I'm not. Just for the record, I'm not.
All right. So I guess this one would also require a motion and a vote if anyone would like to make that motion.
That we're remaining neutral?
Yep.
So moved.
Second.
Right then, I will call for the vote. And again, this is regarding approval of a neutral position on the Sitla land sale in Kane County. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed to this? All right, motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Item number six, review and support determination by steering committee of fiscal year 2024 first trimester CIB application. Now this is going to be interesting. And Gary, we've got about 3 to 5 minutes for this one.
It won't take 3 to 5 minutes for me. We received three applications in this trimester that went to the community impact board staff at the state by the June 1st deadline. Enoch City is applying for funding to expand their city hall by adding a police station to the existing building. I put in the packet my review of that. Right now, they're proposing to add a 6,000 square foot addition to the existing Phoenix City Hall, and it'll have all the things that are necessary for a police station, evidence rooms, things like that in there, as well as restrooms in there, and a secure interview room and a sally port. They are asking for grant. However, they did acknowledge in their public hearing that while they're asking for a grant, it may come in the form of a loan or part loan, part grant. They're aware of that. And so don't lose sleep over the fact they're asking for a grant, but it may not be that when it comes in. That's up to the CIB board.
Yes.
The second one is Escalante City. This would be to expand the medical clinic that's on the east end of town to include a dental area, as well as a wellness and physical therapy room. The existing dental office is in town. What they're proposing, that it was explained in their CIB application, is that if this dental clinic is built and the wellness physical therapy area is done at the existing medical center that they have there, the city owns that building where the current dental is. That would then become the city office, because right now they're in the old high school, and the old high school is not fit for what it's being used for. And so that's the But CID is not being asked to do any funding for the city office portion of that.
So Melanie, it's a little bit of musical chairs, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But it's important for that community to have good dental care in there, and they've got a good arrangement with Wayne County's health to do that, the medical up there. So it's a good project. Then finally, Big Water Town is asking for funding for a further modern truck. This would be something that, like an F-150, that could get out quickly to an accident scene quicker than the other equipment could be there. Ascertain, do we need life flight to be called? Do we need all that kind of stuff? Start some life-saving immediately, especially on some of the bumpy dirt roads out there, as well as on the highway.
Yeah.
That may or may not be considered by the board as a capital expense, but it's more than what the town has. And so it'll go to the board. The board will make that determination. So
the scouting vehicles can really save lives, and they use them a lot with wildland fire type situations too, where they've got just a little vehicle that can get places, especially in a wildland situation, and then assess, and then whether to bring in something bigger or fly in or what have you.
Because they're not going to call in life flight unless somebody that is qualified to say send a helicopter at the expense of getting that there. They won't do it just based on a citizen there saying, send life flight, we need it, you know. But
yeah.
So anyway, those are the three applications this trimester. They'll be considered by the board if they have a July meeting or an August meeting. They have three meetings that are called review meetings, and it'll be considered one of those, whatever the board schedules those as. And then they will know whether they're funded, officially funded in October. So that's what we have this trimester.
So then wait till October. Okay.
That's when the actual funding would take place. They would know prior to that what the board's going to do.
Can I just ask a question? Sorry, I've been away from this group for a long time. What is our role? Are we making a recommendation to CID to approve these?
The policy, it's written into the board's policy, is that the AOG, with where that jurisdiction is located, when they apply to the Community Impact Board, those projects are to be vetted by the governing body of that association of governments. And so what you're doing is vetting it, whether you support it, whether you remain neutral on it, or whether you don't support a project. This board has in the past remained neutral on a project. One of those was a proposed application for a study to study bringing water from Beaver County, and I'm not going to kind of pick off the scab here, but from Beaver County down to Iron County, and that study was going to be a CID application. Our board, because one county, I won't mention the county, was opposed to that project, one county was supportive of it. This body here, rightfully so, remained neutral and let that go the way it was. Another one recently was a golf course proposal out of King County. It was right in the middle of a severe drought. This board supported all of the other applications and chose to remain neutral on the golf course. It wasn't, they were opposed to a golf course. Economic development is not one of the things CIB funds, but it was something that was important to the county, to the community, to Kanab. But it maybe wasn't the right timing. So this board supported all the other eight applications from that trimester, but remained neutral on that one because they didn't want to say, no, we don't like the fact that you're doing it. Of course, it was not now, maybe. So this board, I call it punting, but you always have that option on any application. If you feel it, you don't want to support it, but you don't want to say, no, we don't want it. But that's what this body does. We're required to vet it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And do you think CIB considers a little bit this one factor in their decision making?
Let's ask Commissioner Taylor. Did that get reported to you that, if we didn't support something, or if it was voted not to?
Yes.
A good example of one that this board voted not to support. This was in Washington County. It was for one of the communities that has an old historic bridge that crosses the Virgin River. I won't mention the name and protect the innocent, but they wanted CIB dollars to repair that bridge because it was historic to the community. The county was opposed to it because they felt that $300,000 that was being requested from CIB could be better put towards a new bridge that would connect the cement trucks and dump trucks and emergency vehicles, fire trucks could cross, instead of having repairing an old bridge, which would still have those weight limitations on it. So they supported, this board body supported the county, who said that was not a good use of funds. And so this body voted to not support that, said that we don't support that project. So it's gone every which way on us, and it should be. Historically, most projects are supported because by the time they get to this point on an application, they are a good application. There's something that CIB can fund. Mm-hmm. But there's circumstances where this body doesn't want to support it, and they support that county where it came from. So
with the CIB, you need to make sure that it's a need and not a want. That's why, especially right now, we are the money that we receive anymore is so minimal. It's hard to be able to fund all these projects. So, and then it always helps. I'm just going to tell you right now, it always helps to have skin in the game when you come before CIB. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll give you an example, though. Gasherm came before CIB, and to be honest with you, they couldn't afford any type of loan. I mean, and that's even though they were willing to put some skin in the game, when the CIB board looked at it, they said, look, there's no way. We're either not going to fund this thing because they can't afford it. They turned around and changed it and gave them all grant because it was important to the community, for the community, health, welfare, and safety. So yeah. Anyway, if you can have some skin in the game, it helps.
Now, procedurally, would we go through each of these at the same time, or are they a package?
You could ask if there's anyone that wants to separate one from the other. Otherwise, you could entertain one motion to do all three if it's going to be the same outcome on that. But if somebody has one, so if everybody's supportive of all three of these, then maybe ask people to raise your hand if they're supportive of all three, or if somebody wants to separate one out, and then you could do that one separately. That's how they did it on the golf course one there. The one person motion that I'd like to separate the golf course out and take a separate vote on that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So are there any in particular that have a different reaction from the steering committee? Okay. Then I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make that motion to go ahead and support the Grandmaster CIB applications.
Okay. So you want to support all three of them?
Yes.
Okay. Also, second on that. All those in favor?
Hold on. Donna is a...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Same with Henry.
Look, that power went to my head.
That was quick, Donna. I know that.
So, leaderboard, so you don't want to waste a lot of time waiting for a second.
So when you're a county commissioner, you can have...
I don't intend to do that.
So is it just the commissioners then?
Thanks for covering.
I'll stick with Orange County in a second.
We voted with you though, Donna, just so you know.
Now I will call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
And any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Moving on to item number 7, final fiscal year 2023 budget revision. We've had multiple meetings on this, just to let you all know, and I want to get a quick presentation from Allison McCoy. Okay. So we'll start with the final budget revisions, FY 2023. So there was not a lot of difference from the beginning to the final budget. That's $325,000. Some budgets left us, a few of the CARES budgets, CARES Act budgets, but for the main part, it was an increase in funding. Additional funding for the aging department would be the increase. So if you have any questions about any particular programs, we did present it to the finance committee, and they went through, they had a question on that. So anyone has any particular questions by programs or budgeting as a whole?
And the finance committee did vote to recommend to this body to approve the 2023 final revision as well.
Mm-hmm. If we met last week, I believe it was.
23rd of May.
Okay, the 23rd of May, and went over things pretty much in depth, and then we just had a very brief meeting beforehand just now. So since I'm not hearing questions right now, I'm going to go ahead and open up to the public hearing. So now I'm open to the public hearing, and whether any members of the public who'd like to make a comment.
There is no one online as well.
Okay, hearing none, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing. In the meantime, did anyone think of any questions that they didn't get to ask yet? Okay, with that, I will entertain a motion regarding approval or denial of the final fiscal year 2023 budget revisions.
Move to approve.
Okay.
Second.
All right, thank you both. And I'll call for a vote. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously to approve the final fiscal year 2023 budget revision. Moving on to now to year 2024, proposed fiscal year budget. And this is another presentation from Allison Coy. Okay. So we have the FY 2024 budget. It increased by $918,000 from our previous final budget revisions. And there were some programs that are no longer included. Some of the CARES Act money is disappearing. And we have some new programs. The main reason for the increase in the budget was a street safety for all. It's on page 53. It is for $1,250,000. That is most of the grant will go to consultant fees for project management. The rest would go to our admin. It's $1 million grant from the federal government, $200,000 from the COG, and $25,000 from the state, and $25,000 from the MPO reserve. So that's the main reason for the increase in budget. We do have some new human service grants that we're working on. And we also have a new weatherization grant, and that is from the infrastructure bill. And that's some different funding for weatherization. So most of the new grants are at the end of the summaries, the later numbers. And we have a new Utah Cap diaper grant to help children, babies in poverty, and an affordable connectivity program. We also have a new program with the CED for broadband planning. And that's a small grant, I think $50,000, and that will be used up in the next couple months. But any questions? Thank you. Good job. All right. And so once again, I'm opening up to a public hearing. Are there any members of the public who would like to make a comment on this? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing and move to a vote, I will entertain a motion regarding the approval of fiscal year 2024 budget.
I'll make that motion. I'll second that motion.
Thank you, Nolan. And I will now call for a vote. All those in favor of approving the fiscal year 2024 budget, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously to approve the fiscal year 2024 budget. Finally, item number 9, CDBG policies and procedures and rating and ranking discussion with Cody Christensen. And Cody, this will take approximately 5 minutes.
So we wanted to talk about the CDBG programs. When we were at the policy board committee meeting this winter, a lot of the other areas have eliminated their cap for projects. So we wanted to have a discussion in our area about maybe doing that in our region. Currently, the cap for applications in our area is $350,000, but with the cost of everything going up right now, We wanted to bring it before the committee and have that discussion about possibly removing that cap. The pros with that are, you know, if we have a project that we can do a lot with the money that we get, which it's with the, this year is 1.1 million. So if a, you know, a community gave 1.1 million, they could do a pretty good project with that. The cons, if it would only go to one, possibly could only go to one project for a year. So just wanted to have that discussion with you, see what your thoughts on that.
Did all the rest of them remove their cap?
Not all of them have. A couple of areas have. I think Bragg has. I think Southeast is the other one that has. The other regions are considering it. So
one of the concerns is that they don't have the ability of going to CIB for a portion of a project because CIB doesn't fund certain types of things. They don't do housing. CIB doesn't.
Or parking lots.
but they, so the concern is that they could do it with one stop. And our thought as staff was to do one significant project and get it done for that county or that area that serves multiple communities, like a care and share or something like that. Get it done this year. They won't be back for a number of years. And that was one of the things that I had this conversation with both Nate Weiberg and with Cody, was maybe have some kind of thing in the policy that if you receive that large portion in 1 year, you couldn't come back with an application for a couple more years. You know, you took the whole region, basically the whole region's allocation, but not come back for 2 or 3 or 4 years, whatever, you know, but because that may be some way that it could be spread out to what one county might be, maybe gets this year, you know, it's not going to happen next year. That's just different things. This is why we're having this discussion. This policy won't be, if we do update the policy, it wouldn't be until our August steering committee meeting.
Right. We'll bring the rating policy to you in August for approval, but
we just wanted to start a conversation.
Discuss it now so I could get that on.
I might want to float the idea then that if someone were to take 100% of the total pool, that then they would not be eligible for 5 years. And the reason I would vote that idea is because there's five counties in our association of governments, and then they were taking 100%, then they, I'm just thinking they shouldn't be eligible for 5 years because that would make 100% of.
Well, are you talking, would that be their county-wide or?
Probably just the applicant, say, not the entire county.
I was thinking the entire county is what I meant. Like if an ask came from a county and that took 100%, then they wouldn't be eligible for 5 years. That's just sort of throwing out.
That would be tough because like say Cedar City took the money. Right. Would that make the entire Iron County region ineligible? That might be
quite a separation.
Or vice versa.
Yeah. I would say that applicant would be I'd be ineligible, but the entire making the entire county.
The only way they're going to get them, they're going to be funded for the whole thing is if they're the highest priority project.
We can look at the rating and ranking too to make sure that our priorities are getting the money. Okay. So whatever the priority is for our region, we make sure that they're getting the highest points. So
not a popular idea. Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, I like the idea that the applicant can't apply for that one, but to make the entire county ineligible is a little tough.
Because what if it was a county applicant, then does that mean all the jurisdictions within the county couldn't apply? That's kind of penalizing them.
Yeah.
I just don't want us to forget the little guy.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's the con is.
Because sometimes
that,
let's say
$70,000 project is really important.
And another option we might have is just instead of eliminating cap, raise the cap. Maybe we raise it to $500,000.
Well, I guess maybe we ought to look at the applications each year. Let's say that somebody is, you know, top priority, whatever, and they do need, what do we get again, a million?
We got 1.1 this year.
Now,
I mean, we just about 950,000.
But off of that, is the administrative costs that we have the pay.
Yeah, we take
a planning grant.
Yeah, we take $100,000 for our administration.
Okay, so somewhere between $800,000 and $900,000.
Yes. Yeah.
I wish that we could do it like, and I'm sure they won't change it, but you know, like for instance, like Rat Packs in Cedar City, it was difficult. You have to spend the money the year you got it. But it was never enough to do a major project. So we did a new ordinance where you could rat it 3 years in a row, save up for more, you know.
Yeah, they used to do
multi-year. Did they ever do that?
They used to do multi-year, but they did away with that because they weren't spending the money in timely manner. So it was hurting our standing with HUD. So they did away with that.
And that's kind of what's driving this. Is this allows you to do that multi-year in 1 year and get it done in today's dollar.
And that might be a good thing. Then people can take turns doing work. Or,
yeah. Well, yeah. So that might be another option. One just to maybe raise the cap and sublimate it. So
yeah.
Some things to think about. We don't have to make a decision today, but if that would be something you would please think about, maybe I'll get in touch with you and talk about what we want to do. And if you want to make a decision today, I can put that in.
Well, we don't have that as what it would be, just a
right
a suggestion.
Yeah, suggestion for me today, and I can put that in. We can approve it in August. But otherwise, I mean, if you want to just contact me with what kind of what you'd like to do, and then by August we can approve that when I bring that.
I think during the summer you could send out maybe some proposals out to the
committee, that too.
And then say which one do you like. Here's one scenario. Here's second scenario. You know, maybe. Hold people on.
And Cody, I'd suggest that one of the proposals would be no change.
Right. We could leave it the same where we're at with the $350,000. We can raise it. We could eliminate the cap. Yeah. So we've got some options. I don't know.
That's
pretty good. I don't know kind of what.
We always spend our money.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we've never had a problem spending our money. Okay.
You never know.
All right, thank you, Cody.
Okay, thank you.
Congressional staff update. So we've got a total of 10 to 15 minutes for that. Bob, go first. I'm here. Yay.
May I please sit next to you?
That's how the camera's
good. All right. Again, I'm Kyle Wilson with Senator Romney's office. There are a few things that I wanted to touch bases on, one of which we've spoke about previously, and it's the BLM's draft rule on conservation. The period ends on the 20th. I don't know if we've spoken since we co-sponsored a bill with Senator Barrasso from Wyoming to block that rule specifically. It currently has 8 co-sponsors, all of whom are Republican, including Senator Lee. But we're working on some bipartisan support for that, and I'm cautiously optimistic about that bill. We spoke last time about LOTUS, and in the meantime, the Supreme Court has ruled against the EPA and in favor of the Sackett family, which is a huge win for anybody who uses water, specifically in the Intermountain West. President Biden's LOTUS rule is still on the table. They are trying to reconcile with how the Supreme Court's decision on Obama's LOTUS rule in the Sackett case will affect the Biden administration's going forward. So we're watching that closely, and we spoke about the CRA last time that it was vetoed, but it's something that our finger is on the pulse of. We sponsored a bill that commissions a report on Chinese defense spending, and not just on military spending, but on the civil-military fusion, and that's extremely concerning to us. The Chinese Communist Party essentially enlists every Chinese resident to contribute militarily in some form or another. Likewise, a number of meetings ago, I mentioned that we introduced a bill that would remove China's third world designation from climate treaties, because as we know, they're the largest producer or polluter in the world, and they're not simply not held to the same standards that we are. And that bill made it out of committee on Friday of last week, I believe. So that's a good step in the right direction. Also co-sponsoring a bill that would reduce dependence on, it's the second bill we've co-sponsored on that would reduce dependence on critical minerals. Yeah, that's all I've got for you today so far. If there's anything you can do for you, please let me know.
Great, thanks. And Kyle, I just did text you a link that Kane County put out as an action kit for the comments on the BLM conservation
awesome.
Landscape and health rule. And people can just go to kane.utah.gov and then find the link from the homepage, or I'd send the direct link if you want to push that out. There's a sample resolution that we passed and some other, and then a direct link to make a comment. So people don't have to fish for it on the federal site.
Don't get in the habit of doing that. We'll ask you to do it over and over.
He's already volunteered.
Good.
I'm pretty proud of our land use team.
I would be too.
Or I mean our public lands department.
I want to echo the same concerns about the conservation rule. We're pretty active on that.
Sorry to interrupt you.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm Cole LaCroix. I work for Senator Lee. I've been working for him for about 4 years back in D.C. Have recently taken up a role here in Southern Utah as the regional director. Unfortunately, I'll only be here for a couple months. I have just gotten into a grad program to go to forestry school, so I'm hoping to come back and be even more engaged on that side of things. But for the time I'm here, hoping to execute some projects for y'all and make sure you're well taken care of. As far as an update, the conservation rule is something we're very concerned about and working hard on back in DC, especially as a member of the Energy and Natural Resource Committee. There is a legislative hearing coming up in the ENR committee, specifically related to forestry-related legislative proposals. We've got kind of a package we put together that will likely be a part of that hearing. The first one would include Utah as an institution eligible for funding under the Southwest Ecological Restoration Institutes program as a SWERI institute. Currently, Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado are all recipients of those funding. It's about $15 million a year. Adding Utah to that program could direct a couple million dollars a year to the WRI project and help execute some good vegetation programs out here. Additionally, we've got another bill that would help create a body of data for land management users to understand what the naturally occurring stand density indexes of the land are. One problem that's recently been identified by the Forest Service is when land management agencies are conducting a treatment, they don't always know what the carrying capacity of the land is in regards to the amount of vegetation should be there. So right now they're waiting till about 60% stand density index to conduct a treatment, then they reduce it back to about 35. This study indicated that the numbers that we should be going off of may be closer to 30% as an absolute maximum and have our stand density indexes closer to about 15 to 20%. So the bill would essentially direct the Forest Service to conduct some studies and get some good information out there so that we, when we invest these billions of dollars into forest management activities, we're actually making good on those dollars and getting our forests to a state where they are actually less prone to fire. And then finally, a bill that would create a categorical exclusion for aspen regeneration. A big problem we see on the landscape because of our historic suppression of fires is that conifers are encroaching into our aspen stands at about a rate of 1% a year. So I don't have a Utah-specific number, but in Montana, that has led to about a 65% decrease in aspen presence on their range, which has really big impacts for water yield in our watersheds and also livestock forage and impacts on biodiversity as well, so deer and elk and all that stuff. So a categorical exclusion that would help land management agencies be able to pull out conifers and create space for aspen to be able to regrow and have those good impacts on the landscape. So
I'm just going to say it. So this is the backdoor way to get rid of some of the PJ, right?
PJ and other conifers. Yeah. Yeah.
Then they're killing us. They're strangling us.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Good deal. From Congressman Stewart, as you know, he has tendered his resignation effective September 15th. So we are all pretty sad about that. He has done a great job. The reason for September 15th is so that he can make sure that he is there through the appropriations season. So those of you who have projects that have been approved by our office, he is hoping to make sure that he can push those through onto the bigger budget and make sure those are approved. Paul, I actually have a call that I need to return to Iron County, but those are still on the docket. We are still very, we can't guarantee anything, but we feel good about those projects going forward, that they will be able to be funded and will be included in the final budget. Other than that, we are not probably going to drop any bills. It's just hard to get a lot of momentum when people know that you are leaving. So we will be signing on as co-sponsors or other bills, but probably not introducing any of our own. The congressman will be there, will be voting, and the rest of the staff is here. We're here to help with whatever we can in that capacity, but not probably introducing new bills. Other than that, reach out, let us know what we can do to help.
Would you please tell Congressman Stewart how much we appreciate him? He's been a warrior for us, and we're going to miss that man.
I will let him know. He is, I don't know, I mean, I'm on the official side, not the campaign side, but he is planning to be at that meeting for the second congressional district, and thank the delegates. So he will be at that meeting in Delta on the 25th. And then actually it's going to be in Bryce Canyon for a naturalization hearing. He's going to be speaking at that on the 29th, I believe. So he'll be there as well. But I will pass along his best wishes.
Thanks.
That's a public invite, I think. Could you send us an email about it? If not,
I'm pretty sure. I mean, generally those naturalization meeting or ceremonies are public, but I will track that down. Right.
Well, thank you.
With no further congressional staff updates, now we come to the state agency updates. And we do have 5 minutes for that. Is anyone here for that? I didn't see anybody either, but
usually that's workforce services. It's the one here to stay. So
okay, very good. But I do know that we have some universities and technical colleges to give us an update.
I'll defer to
I was gonna defer to you because you've been here and I haven't. So set a good example for all of
you. Well, hello everybody. I'm sorry I missed the last meeting. I had another engagement. Henry Walton, Utah Tech University. Always appreciate being with you. I just got a couple of quick updates that I wanted to share with you. I know we've talked here about the university's polytechnic academic mission, which is really focused on STEM education and active and applied learning opportunities. In line with that polytechnic academic mission, we hosted the Global Polytechnic Summit on our campus last week. We had representatives from a variety of prestigious universities from 4 different continents across the United States, Texas A&M, Virginia Tech, Purdue University, et cetera. And again, this was just a real opportunity for us to convene and discuss with other like-minded universities how we can further build out a workforce that is responsive to the needs of the community. So a really positive event, a lot of good action right just came out of that. And again, it's just a personification of our efforts to ensure that we're engaging in the right ways with the workforce and meeting the needs of you all here. The other update I have in line with that is something, again, we've discussed here briefly, which is the university's efforts to create an innovation district at the Desert Color campus, which the state funded for us 2 or 3 years ago. This is near Bloomington off exit 2 in St. George. And what we're trying to do here is develop an ecosystem where the university, both public, private sector, and medium and large businesses can come together, convene with each other, and create new businesses and ideas that will diversify and spur economic growth in our community. We've been working on this for the past year. We've worked extensively with private industry, public elected officials in Washington County primarily, and we've put together the beginnings of a draft comprehensive plan that will help us vision and build out that innovation district. We don't know exactly how many acres that innovation district will be. It will work with private developers to develop that space and private companies that will be anchor companies in that space. They'll be required to work with our students to provide active and applied learning opportunities for those students. And I think in closing, what I wanted to share was that we've identified, at least preliminarily, a few different industry sectors that we really want to focus on in that innovation district. One of those is biotechnology. We've all heard about precision genomics, Intermountain Healthcare, and some of the work going on in that space. We think there's a real opportunity for the university and the community in Southern Utah to engage in biotech and build out a diverse workforce in that space. So we're excited about that. Another one is endurance and extreme human performance. We've got a really awesome natural environment here in Southern Utah. We've got the Ironman, the St. George Marathon, and a variety of endurance races that happen across the five county region. So we want to attach ourselves to that market, that industry, think apparel, scientific discovery related to human endurance, and technology associated with those sorts of sports. And then lastly, we want to have a focus on green technology and ensuring that we are conserving and making best use of the resources, the scarce resources that we have in the desert. One thing we want to focus on in particular is water conservation. There's a lot of work going on in that space in Southern Utah. We want to hopefully provide technologies that can enhance water conservation and ensure that we're doing the best we can with the resources we have. So at a later date, when we get that plan finalized, I think it might be appropriate to have some of our team make a presentation here on the full details of that plan, but something we're really excited about. We hope that it will be a real catalyst for the Southern Utah community and really good for the university and the students as well. With that, I'm happy to take any questions and always appreciate being with you.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I guess we don't have any questions because you explained everything so well.
I hope so.
And then just 2 to 5 minutes for local affairs discussion.
Oh, I'm not on. I was at Utah University. No, I just wanted him to go first. So I think.
Okay. My apologies.
It has been a number of years since I've been part of this committee, and I'm happy to be back. President Mindy Benson has asked that I assume a role of community and government relations. So that puts me back here with all of you. It formalizes my relationship with the elected officials in Cedar City and Iron County, and allows for some expanded relationships with our federal delegation. So I'm pleased to have that opportunity. You are in Cedar City during the second tax season, similar to a Christmas tax season, is the Utah Summer Games tax season. And the Shakespeare Festival will open in about a week. And so people from all over the state, all over the country are here to celebrate the great things that help contribute to Cedar City as festival city. I have passed around a copy of our most recent alumni magazine, wherein you get the latest news. I'm not sure I have much else here for you today, other than please know that the question that President Benson asked most often when we are in meetings with elected officials, with local businesses and other partners, is how can SUU help? So know that as we have the opportunity to meet here in this steering committee, as we have the opportunity to meet in other groups of people, forums that are yet to be scheduled, know that that's what President Benson wants most to do is know how SUU can help you meet more needs, how we might together partner to build business, to build economy, to build atmosphere, to build culture on our campus and in our community. That's what she most wants to do. So I don't know how helpful that is or isn't, but that's what I have for today.
Thank you, Donna. And I apologize again.
No worries.
Is there anyone else who would like to give it up? Now we'll jump to local affairs discussions. Is anything burning over there or what we got going? Commissioner Taylor?
I have something. The Grand Staircase was created for science. And in 20 some odd years of being called the Grand Staircase, created for science, they don't have a science plan. And now they've decided to write a science plan, and I believe they're trying to turn it over to some special interest group. I would like to see this group, the state of Utah, our counties, Kane and Garfield, be involved in the decisions in making that science plan. So I just want to bring that to your attention. I don't know whether we can write a letter and say, you know, we want to be involved. So I think it's important that we have a say in our own counties once in a while. So.
Absolutely. Commissioner Taylor, if the, like, the federal delegation were to write a letter, to whom would that be addressed? That's what's my
opinion. I would think to Adae Nelson. She's the monument manager. And also maybe to Greg Sheehan, the state BLM director. I get tired of everybody making decisions for our rural counties, and we're the last ones to be seated at the table. And when we are seated at the table, it's to say, oh, by the way, this is the decisions we've made for you. Let's get involved. Let's be proactive. We say we want to manage our public lands. Well, if we are, let's do it. Let's do it together as a team in rural Utah. And we don't need all these special selfish interest groups to do it for us. We can. We have the knowledge to write a science plan. We can do that. We heard earlier today about local government. Local government is the best government. And yet all the decisions that are made for local government is made in Washington, D.C. I would beg to say half of them probably can't spell Escalante. And I don't mean to be belligerent to them. I'm just saying that we have a pulse. The local government has a pulse on our communities, on our counties, and we need to be actively involved in that. We need to be at the table. I know for a fact there's a lot of these special interest groups that meet with the BLM daily, weekly, monthly. We need to be at that same table. And to do it, I'd like to see us involved in the science plan.
Now, do you think it should go to the head of the BLM and the head of the Department of Interior as well, or just keep it local? You think
ask, a better chance ask Senator Romney and Senator Lee and Chris Stewart what they think. But we need to become involved in our communities and in our counties of what's going on. Not we're going to have to take whatever they dish out to us.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that's impacting all of our counties, I believe, right now is the fact that we did have so much moisture in the past year that it created quite a lot of, you know, annual grasses growing up to create a lot of fuel. And now that they're drying, the cheatgrass and the foxtails are starting to dry. Especially in our lower elevations, we're expecting and gearing up for a substantial fire season of quick spreading, quick burning fire when we get a hot, windy day. So we're all kind of gearing up for that. And I know in our county and our surrounding areas, we've been meeting regularly with the Wildland Fire Patrol and everyone else to kind of get as much as we can taken care of in advance and just be aware and also reaching out to our constituents and please, if it's a no burn day, really actually don't burn and things like that. Anything else?
So Commissioner, can I just follow up? That decision for a science plan is happening just at the state or?
They're writing it for the monument.
And that's happening right now.
Well, they're trying to
put somebody in place, right? Celeste, to write that plan. And, you know, we're hearing that it could be a one of the local groups, environmental groups, that writes that science plan. And I just think
we need to look at statute and see how much latitude the agency has to delegate that responsibility. It should have occurred upon the monument's creation. And management plans should be based on the inventory and the data and that
side. Can you tell me what the inventory is?
that's where.
Can they tell me, Kyle? Can they tell me what the inventory?
Nope.
Celeste, can they tell me what the inventory is?
They cannot. We had a coordinating meeting with them last week, and
they have.
They admitted that they
just don't want you, the public, to see it.
And the science plan is supposed to be based on the inventory plan, yes, which they can't divulge, which is different from the monument management plan.
Is it classified?
I think we should take a hard look at who's allowed to do that, like whether or not they have the same latitudes they do with other parts of the NEPA process, and also potentially FOIA, whatever is being withheld. Those are things that we need to take hard, serious looks at.
If you can get any information out of FOIA, I would love to see it.
That's a challenge.
It
sounds like a challenge.
So, anyway.
All right. Yeah, just as a follow-up question, there is a monument management meeting coming up in August. Is that correct?
Yes.
And is that's not a coordinating meeting, that's just a monitoring?
No, that's a monument advisory committee. But what they've done is and the terms were up, rightfully so, but they have just made it nothing but a special interest group.
The staff. So all of those vacant positions have been filled.
They vacated like three that was from filled by one, Bill Wepner, two, Steve Westhoff, three, Drew Parkin. And it just looks like a good thing.
And then also Commissioner Gantz lost 50.
So there's four. I know it looks like
everybody on the same team.
So is will they replace him at the next MAC?
To me, they've already been replaced. Okay, they picked new people already. Yes. No.
Yeah. That's been a big loss for us.
Oh, to lose Bill Wepner and Steve Westhoff and Drew Parkin is huge to the local people. Mm-hmm. To the local people. So, anyway, we can do good things here if we work together.
Thank you for allowing us to end on that good note. And with that, I will adjourn. It's 2:31 p.m. I apologize for going over. And it is your fault.
Actually, we're supposed to end at 3, right?
I was going to say.
Well, wait, what?
It ends. The chair calls it at the end.
Yes, but normally we set it up so to go to possibly 3.
Well, that was under your tutelage there.
Wait to Jones for another half hour. I love that.
Hillary's looking for an excuse for a fight today.
Thank you.